This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. This episode is an excerpt from my public access TV show, Talk with TQ. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. I'm so happy that you're joining me here once again. But actually, here's a different place, because tonight, we're on location at the Hudson Valley Museum of Contemporary Art in Peekskill, New York. And I'm very pleased to be here. It's a wonderful, wonderful venue. I'm getting spoiled by everything around me. But it doesn't matter. It's more about our guest tonight. Her name is Carol Bash. Carol Bash is somebody that I'm really very pleased and honored that she's agreed to speak with me. She is an award-winning filmmaker. She is also the founder of the Paradox Films. That's her company. And she is so outstanding because I've been kind of researching her a little bit. And I've noticed that in her bio, she seems to admire others. And I'm going to talk about some of her work and some of the people that she admires that are sort of like a surprise to me, people that we don't know about, that we should know about. And I'll just make a note that this is Women's History Month. And I'm really pleased to be interviewing Carol and talk to her about some of the women that she admires. So welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you, Toni.
Now, the last time we really had a conversation was when you first dropped into town. How's it going living in Peekskill? How are you enjoying it?
It's been wonderful. I love this community. I have to actually step back and say that I'm actually from Peekskill. I grew up in the town around here, Cortland Manor, left. Got married, career, divorced, came back here.
Okay.
And so, to be back here in Peekskill after decades, you could say, and just seeing how much the community has really changed and thrived and just been so welcoming, and particularly just the artistic community has just been so embracing of me and my work that it's just a wonderful place to live.
We're really happy to have someone like you here, you know, and I see that I can say that it seems, and I've seen this before with other people that have left Peekskill and come back, it seems when they come back, they step into their power. They step into their creativity. Now, what kind of changes have you seen here? Do you see here since you've been here last?
I guess the real contrast would be since I was a little girl and here. And so I was growing up here in the late 60s, early 70s. And now we're talking, so that was 30 years ago. And I would say in that time period, Peekskill was a little dicier. Still mom and pop, a lot of mom and pop stores, but there was a lot more crime. It wasn't as sort of like, it's become more of a boutique town, you know? And I would say that a lot of that has to do with bringing the artist to Peekskill that really transcended and transitioned Peekskill into more or less the city that it is now. But before then, it was more rough and tumble. It still always has character. It always had character. People were always friendly. But it's become a bit more upscale, but in a good way, because it's still got that mix.
Yeah, I've heard this from others as well. And you're part of it now, which makes it even a little bit more like a boutique town, because you're a documentary filmmaker. So when you were here in Peekskill 30 years ago, was this one of your aspirations then?
No. I was, as a child, I had no idea what I would be. As a little girl, I actually wanted to be a scientist. But I always wrote, and I always felt that I was creative on some level. But it wasn't until after I graduated from college that I kind of realized where I wanted to be, and that would be sort of in the electronic medium.
I think that's a smart move, actually. I mean, maybe I'm a little prejudiced because I'm in the electronic medium. But I think that what you're doing, and I've looked at some of the things that you research, And I was particularly intrigued by the fact that you were talking about a jazz musician that I've heard the songs, but I didn't realize that it was a woman, a Black woman that had written these songs, Mary Lou Williams. And she is extraordinary because in researching you, I see that she was a pianist, and I listened to her music. I didn't realize I was listening to her music, but she has this way of like bringing everybody in. And also some of the things that she wrote, when I listened to those compositions, I noticed that she kind of put herself in the background and she might have a saxophone playing that lead melody. How did you find Mary Lou Williams? Why haven't we heard of her?
Good questions. I love jazz. You know, I grew up with jazz. My father's a jazz head. Never heard of Mary Lou Williams. When I was married, my father-in-law also was a jazz head. And so he is the one that brought me to Mary Lou Williams. Basically, the story is that at this point, like 20 years ago, that I went into my in-law's house and she was playing on the stereo. And I said to my father-in-law, I'm like, wow, you know, who is this playing on the piano? It sounded so funky and fresh. And he's like, that's Mary Lou Williams. She's one of the greats. And I'm like, really? You know, because I, you know, the greats, Miles Davis, Dizzy Gillespie, I never heard of Mary Lou. Basically, at the time that I was there, was, you know, in the early 2000s, the music that she was playing was something that she had written in the 70s. She passed away in 1981. So at that point, that music that she was playing was 30 years old, and yet it still sounded so fresh. But a year later, a book came out about her life called Morning Glory, The Biography of Mary Lou Williams by Linda Dahl, and read it cover to cover. And I was just like, why don't we know about this incredible woman? Like, this is just not right. I'm going to do a documentary on her.
Oh, okay.
She just spoke to me like that. I was like, I'm going to do it.
Just like that. Just like that. I would love to see that documentary at some point. I really would. And you mentioned Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis. Did she play with those people? Or were those people influenced by her?
Yes, she was basically the influencer to an extent because they were younger. In the 50s, well, she and Dizzy Gillespie were very, very close friends. But I would say in the 50s, she lived in Harlem and she had an apartment there that all these incredible, what you would call the beboppers now, came to her apartment and sort of sat at her feet because she was such an advanced composer. And they admired her from her prime period, which was like 10 years prior in the swing era. So, you know, she was someone to look up to. And they recognized that she understood what they were trying to do. And so when you're talking about like Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie and Bud Powell, they're there. Listening to Mary Lou and Thelonious Monk, they all were just really good admirers of her.
And I understand that they might have also played her music, perhaps. And I noticed that Benny Goodman played her music. You know, I'm just very intrigued by how musicians get together and can just do it, you know? It always fascinates me. They might not even know each other. I've seen this in Peekskill where musicians do not even know each other will go in a room, they're playing a gig, and they kind of know the song, and then boom, they just put it together, and they play the song. And it sounds as if they've been playing together for years.
Yeah, I would say, well, you know, she was an arranger, so she did write songs for a lot of big bands and other jazz, you know, band leaders. But I think what you're talking about is that's just the art in jazz anyway, you know, I can speak to that, where it is improvisation. It is, well, she would say it's a conversation. Jazz is a conversation. And so as a musician, and I'm not a musician, so I can't speak to that, but as a musician, basically you're listening to the other person and you're responding and it's, And it's just the art and craft of being able to improvise and sort of riff off of one another. That's just the creative talent of being a really good musician.
Well, I'm glad you made that movie. I think people need to learn about her, and you're actually documenting African history and women's history by engaging in Mary Lou Williams. I think it's a beautiful thing. It is a beautiful thing. But you've made some other films as well, and you're working on some stuff right now. Tell me about the Blueprint for My People. Tell me about that.
Okay. So I'm now working on a short film called Blueprint for My People. And it's a sort of a visual poem in the sense of taking the poem by Margaret Walker, For My People, which is an epic poem about the African-American struggle and triumph, and weaving it around these really rare photographs called cyanotypes, which are blueprints. And these are pictures of African-Americans in the late 18th century, late 1800s, early 1900s, candids, very unusual in the fact that they're just very candid, you know, just and not posed, authentic, and also weaving in contemporary footage. So it's a visual poem sort of talking about, in a nonlinear, experimental way, our journey as African Americans in America.
So where do you get your your mojo to do this? It's seems kind of interesting to me that you just pick up a camera or you just start writing a script. And it just reason I'm asking this is because there's a 30 year gap between Peekskill, between Somewhere Else and Peekskill, and Peekskill and Somewhere Else. And then you come back and then you've won all these awards and you're making films. What is your inspiration? I can see how Mary Lou Williams would inspire anyone. Mm-hmm. But you've made a few films.
Yeah. Well, I would say that, you know, that's what I've been working in film for 20 some odd years. So even when I wasn't here, I was working with other filmmakers as a producer or a cinematographer or coordinating producer, whatever have you. But how does inspiration come to me? Gosh, you know, how does it come to anyone? It's like it could be just finding an interesting person like Mary Lou Williams. For Blueprint for My People, it's looking at these. I'm also an archival researcher, so just looking at, you know, these incredibly rare photographs. You know, I also like photography, you know, whatever strikes me. It's hard to talk about what inspires someone.
Yeah.
It just comes, right?
I suppose, you know, I think that I can imagine a docudrama about Mary Lou Williams, directed and produced by Carol Bash. I just put it out there. No, only because it's obvious that you feel some passion for that.
Well, maybe. I kind of actually feel like I've done my Mary Lou Williams. Like, I'm honored that the film was done in 2015 and it aired on PBS. And yet still, there's such an audience for it that it's going to be screening here in Peekskill at HB Mocha. It now can be streamed on Showtime. So, I mean, the fact that it's still living in the world after so many years of making it and having it been broadcast before, it's an honor.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to broadcast things. And I really love the media, no matter what they say. I think it's a really great way to learn, as long as you know that you're dealing with truth. I noticed also that Mary Lou, getting back to her, because I can see why you're inspired, she had a radio show on WNEW. Mm-hmm. Where she was actually a coach for, I guess, like a piano workshop coach. That's remarkable. And how long ago was that, I wonder? WNEW, couldn't have been too long ago.
This was in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. And it was called the Mary Lou Williams Workshop. I don't remember how the show came together, but it was more or less, she went in. Mm-hmm. And kind of played whatever was in her spirit, you know. So, and at the moment, at that time, she was composing a piece called The Zodiac Suite. And so she had written a few movements based on the zodiac signs, but she wanted to finish them out. And she went into the workshop and she claims that she would just compose on the spot, you know, the remaining movements of the Zodiac Suite on the radio.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know.
Well, on the spot is a good thing because I know something about being over rehearsed. You know, sometimes you can be a little over rehearsed and then the actual performance is not really authentic anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do documentary filmmaking, when you do your thing, so do you work with a full, obviously with a sound tech and a lot of different moving parts? How many people do you usually do the your documentary film people within your production company, Paradox Films? How many people are involved?
So basically, to do a shoot, it's the camera person, it's the sound person, it might be a co-producer who's sort of managing the set and the production assistant. So it could be like as many as like four people, but then it could be more. When I was doing Mary Lou, it was, you know, we had evocative scenes, you know, acting scenes. So, I mean, it was hair and makeup and, you know, the wardrobe person. I mean, it depends on what you're shooting.
So you do like reenactment.
Mm-hmm. We did reenactments. And but I've also shot just myself. You know, I don't shoot anymore, but I did, you know, I was a camera sound.
So where did you actually learn this? And you talked about getting involved with this. Not, you didn't talk about really doing it in high school, did you? I always wonder what makes people start doing what they're doing.
I started in news, actually. I worked at CBS News.
Yeah.
It was at CBS News in the 1990s that I knew that this was where I wanted to be. I love, you know, just the fast pace and the just being around the camera and all that. But it wasn't until I realized after 7 years of working at CBS that I was tired of the news cycle. I really wanted to do more creative storytelling. And so I went to the news school and got my master's in media studies. And it was doing that, learning the camera, learning film history, learning how to edit on film, because we're talking in the 1990s, that I realized that this was me. This is what I wanted to do.
The news school, that's a very special place. We have something in common about the news school, you know, and I'm glad to see that you went there to do it because I have like a special place in my heart for the news school. They don't know it, but they don't know it and they probably don't care. But, you know, really, I do have a special place in my heart because I took film there, but I was only 15.
Oh.
Yeah, but that's another story. This interview is more about you. And it's when people tell me they learned film at the new school, I'm like, why didn't I stay? You know? Oh, because I was only 15. It was only the summer. But I think that what you're doing, that your mindfulness in choosing your subject matter is remarkable. Mm. You know, most people wouldn't even think to even research someone and do a film about somebody that their father happened to listen to. Mm. Really, and you had jazz around in your house all the time, but I want to talk more about some of your future plans with your documentary filmmaking. Mm. So what comes next for you?
Okay, so there's Blueprint for My People. There's also, and right now I'm focusing on doing more short films because I do have a full-time job, so I can really now focus more of my time is really just set for short filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And editing. I'm focusing more on editing as opposed to, you know, doing cinematography or anything like that. So the next project is called My Battle with PD.
Tell me what that means.
My Battle with Parkinson's Disease.
Okay.
Now, I don't have Parkinson's disease. It's a memorial piece. A friend of mine, an activist, a disability activist named John Williams, passed away from complications of Parkinson's. But before he did, a few years ago, he wrote this incredible essay about what it was to live with Parkinson's disease. And it just blew my mind that, wow, I really get like the struggle and the pain. But, you know, also just his defiance and resilience and just he's not going to let this horrible, you know, neurodegenerative disease get to him. So I want to take his words, this incredible essay that he wrote, which was called My Battle with PD, Parkinson's Disease, you know, and just bring it to life through his archival of, you know, his friends and his family, maybe using animation.
Oh, animation.
I love animation. So, I mean, just so that's another piece that I'm sort of going to be beginning at some point in the next year or so.
So he was actually an advocate for the disabled.
Yes, he was.
And how old was he when he died?
He died like 2 years ago.
Oh, no, it was recently.
Oh, recent, yes. And he was in his 60s.
Oh, my goodness, he was young.
Mm-hmm. Maybe 70s.
That's still kind of young these days.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. You know, because most people, I don't care who you are, most people don't look their age. I don't care who you are, I don't care what color you are, most people don't look their age, you know? I'm just saying, and I look at everybody. I'm really very, very impressed with what you're doing, and I really want to make sure that people know where they can find you. Where can they find you?
Well, they can find me on my website, paradoxfilms.tv, or carolbash.com. That's probably the best way to sort of seek out my work. But also I'm on social media, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter.
Do you have any of your films live streamed or streamed anywhere? Are you on YouTube or you kind of keep your property safe?
Yeah, no. You know, there you can see trailers of my work. Okay. You know, and I have the links on your website.
Okay, that's good. I wish people would go there. I'm really very impressed with everything that you do. I'm kind of, right now, I have to say, I'm a little awestruck. I don't know if you should get nervous in an interview, but I'm going to admit it, that I'm like awestruck by what you're doing. I'm like, I was reading, I was like, she does all this stuff. What am I going to, she's going to talk to me?
don't be awestruck.
No, it's amazing. No, it is. I mean, and it's hard to fascinate me with photography and filmmaking because I've been around it. Two marriages, they were both photographers, they were both filmmakers. So it's hard for me to be impressed overall. But with you, I'm impressed because you just pick, and also the fact that you're a woman doing this, because as we know, it's not as simple for you as it might be for someone else. So I'll ask you, when you bring your crew in, what's the balance between men and women in there?
I would say 50-50.
Okay, we like that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I would say in documentary filmmaking, there are a lot of women. You know, women, it's not like feature films. There's a strong presence of women in documentary filmmaking, even amongst the crews. So it's not surprising to see a woman sound person or a woman cinematographer in documentary films. Mm-hmm. So that's the good thing.
That is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when women started getting into documentary films, and I can bet dollars to donuts on this, that I feel that the men, as much as we love them, we really do, you know, I think that they probably believed that we wouldn't be able to handle the technology of it. Surprise!
I would say, like, because this technology is so lightweight now, that opened the door. Because it was heavy, you know, the VHS cameras and the film cameras. I mean,
carrying stuff up the street, up the hill.
Yeah.
Then, you know, the shoot is like the shooting 5 minutes of film and it took you 3 hours.
Right. But I would say, lightening the technology has opened up the door for a lot more women. And
you could always hire someone to do the heavy lifting.
Of course.
There's nothing wrong with employing people.
Right.
You know, it's a good thing. It really is. So you aspire to make more films. I mean, you're saying that you kind of seem like you're kind of pulling back a little bit, but I sense that there's something bigger in the hopper.
Yeah, I have a list of films, but I can't really talk about them until things have sort of been, you know, cleared. Like, I don't have permission. I'm not at the point where I'm able to talk about them because the paperwork, the T's haven't been crossed, the I's haven't been dotted. I haven't approached certain people about certain subjects that I want to do. But rest assured, I have a very long list of films that I want to make.
Yes.
And I will keep making them.
I can imagine that. And the intellectual property is to be protected. Believe me, I know. You know, I know about plagiarism. from both ends. But I think that it's really a wonderful thing that you're doing this. And who do you aspire to work with? You'd be working with other women. Do you have any aspirations for teaching? Because, you know, you are a role model for what you're doing, you know, whether you want to be or not. You know, you are a role model. And I know some young people that really want to do what you're doing.
Well, thank you. I actually have the pleasure of working for my day job. I work for an organization called Black Public Media. Actually, the executive director, Leslie Fields Cruz, is also a person that lives in Peekskill. She's a community member. And it's an organization that is tied to PBS, but its mission is to give support to filmmakers from the African diaspora. And so I'm the programming coordinator for Black Public Media. And so that ties in with my creative life, of course, and just the mission of giving back to the community and supporting people, young people, or just other filmmakers of color.
Well, we really do appreciate you for what you're doing, I have to say. And I believe I interviewed her. What's her name?
Leslie Fields Cruz.
I believe we did interview her. Mm. Yes. I think that's a friend of our director.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you're just an outstanding person. I thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk to you at length. And I invite you to come back because I know you have more to say. And I always have more questions. I just don't like to shoot them all out at once. You know, gotta find something else. The next time for you to come back, we'll talk about that. But that's beautiful. What you're doing is wonderful. And I'm so glad that you're in Peekskill, New York. And I'm very happy to be here at MoCA with this beautiful backdrop with Mara Mills.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful thing. But you'll have to come back and interview with me again because I know there's more to say. And I do have more questions.
I'm here to answer them. And I really appreciate this opportunity, Toni.
That's okay.
It's really been a pleasure.
The pleasure's mine. I'll be cyber-stalking you.
Like,
so that's what I do. And I'll say to the audience, I look forward to the next time, and I'll be back and see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.